From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. This week we feature the letter H, the herring bait fishery in Norton Sound, herring gill netting in Togiak, and a bit of an unusual twist, falling halibut prices due to a developing Atlantic halibut fishery. All that and more coming up this week on the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
Let's start with that developing halibut fishery that's offering competition to Alaska's fishermen. As prices and demand for Pacific halibut have fallen in Alaska, commercial fishermen say a new Canadian competitor is to blame. Since 2012, Canadian imports of fresh Atlantic halibut have grown roughly 60%. Historically, Atlantic halibut has not competed with its close relative on the West Coast since New England and Canadian fishermen overfished those stocks back in the late 1880s. But as the catch continues to grow north of the border, fishermen in New England are working toward restarting a fishery in U.S. waters. KBBI's Aaron Bolton reports from Homer that could have a serious impact on Alaska's halibut industry.
Atlantic halibut seems to have been on the tip of the commercial fishing industry's tongue in Alaska as imports from Canada continue to carve out a significant slice of the New England fresh halibut market. Prices on the docks in Alaska have fallen about $2 per pound, and there's a surplus of halibut in the freezer from last year that isn't selling. Doug Bowen works with Alaska Boats and Permits, a vessel and fishing permit broker in Homer. Bowen and others in the industry say both are a result of Pacific halibut losing out to Canadian fish.
So it's kind of a new world order here in the ex-vessel prices, and maybe something that we're going to be dealing with for some time.
But Alaska's fishing industry is not the only one noticing the growth of the Canadian Atlantic halibut fishery.
You know, a lot of those boats are fishing on the U.S.-Canadian line and having very good results here, and it's been going on for quite a while. And frankly, New England fixed gear boats are missing out on this opportunity.
Mike Russo is a New England-based commercial fisherman, and he's been trying to strum up support for an industry halibut longline survey in U.S. waters. Russo says the Atlantic halibut Canadian fishermen are catching are the same fish U.S. fishermen are seeing more of as they target other species.
Somebody's going to make us prove it, but I believe that's what we'll bear out. You know, those fish don't know political lines in the ocean on a chart.
Information on Atlantic halibut stocks in the U.S. is minimal. There are no extensive abundance surveys, and federal fishery managers don't actively manage the stock as a commercial fishery. Fishermen are only allowed one fish per trip as bycatch. Chris McGuire works with the Nature Conservancy in Massachusetts, which is trying to collect information on the valuable bottom fish. He's been working with fish biologists and management officials to see if what U.S. fishermen like Russo are saying is in fact true.
We're working with commercial fishermen to do biological sampling of halibut to determine age and size at maturity. We're doing some DNA sampling from that. And then in a separate part of that project, we're doing a little bit of pop-up satellite tagging to figure out where the fish that we see off of New England go over the course of a whole year.
McGuire is working with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada to satellite tag the fish, which will help determine whether Atlantic halibut on both sides of the border should be treated as one stock, which is how Pacific halibut are managed by the International Pacific Halibut Commission. Richard McBride is a fisheries biologist with NOAA Fisheries Greater Atlantic Regional Office. McBride teamed up with McGuire and New England fishermen to collect biological samples from the halibut they're catching.
I mean, if we're really to manage them as a renewable resource, we want fish to spawn at least once in a quality way and maybe more times, have the potential to spawn more than once. And then that's the kind of thing that helps really accelerate the rebuilding.
All of the fervor around Atlantic halibut could be another significant blow to Alaska fishermen and fish buyers who have historically controlled the market on the East Coast. But both McBride and McGuire say it could be another 5 to 10 years before U.S. fishery managers have enough information to start an Atlantic halibut fishery. Still, those in the Alaskan fishing industry, like Andy Wink, a fisheries analyst, say depending on how things shake out, a U.S. Atlantic halibut fishery could maintain that new world order the Alaska fishing industry is currently coping with.
I guess the question there is whether it adds total supply or not. If they essentially get a cut of the Canadian halibut fishery, it's a domestic fishery, so it's, you know, much more likely to go domestic, but it doesn't have nearly the impact as if you're talking about adding tack onto the Canadian tack.
If scientists find that Atlantic halibut along the East Coast belong to one stock, setting up an internationally managed fishery in U.S. waters could push the process down the road. And Wink says even if New England fishermen are able to start fishing in 5 years, the Alaska fishing industry's more immediate concern is still the growing number of truckloads of Atlantic halibut from Canada currently moving across the border. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their family. AMC at amsea.org.
The 2018 Togiak Sacro herring fishery wrapped up officially on Thursday when the lone gill netter ended his season. The Perth Seine fleet took their quota by May 2nd, leaving Frank Woods and his crew on their own to fish for the 7,000 tons of herring allocated to gill netters. KDLG's Avery Lill met Woods at the Dillingham Boat Harbor as he arrived after almost 4 weeks on the water.
Seagulls wheeled under gray skies, and low clouds spit rain as the fishing vessel Wave Rider motored back into Dillingham. After about 4 weeks on the water near Togiak, a truck trailer hauled the 32-foot gillnet boat into the yard. Dillingham's Frank Woods was the only gillnetter to participate in this year's Togiak Sacro herring fishery. Translucent, shimmering scales covered Woods' baseball cap-like sequins. He stepped into the wheelhouse, which was cramped with sleeping berths for himself and his three crew members, and a diner-style booth table by the window.
It's a clean compared to what it was. I put tarps down. Smell like fish.
Yeah, a little bit.
See, everything looks like that after a while. Tarps on the floor, tarps on the bedding stuff, and this is where we live.
The mood on the boat was celebratory. It was a productive but tough season, and Woods and his crew were glad to be home.
It was a phenomenal year, yeah. On a good average day, we'd catch 100 tons a day when we were able to fish with good weather.
But good weather was hard to come by.
The first 2 weeks was hell for weather, I could say. We only had a day and a half, 2 days of good fishing. And then, you know, it kind of cleared up a little bit, but still weather, all southerly winds. I've never seen the water so murky. There's been a southerly storm after storm after storm for a month here. The temperature didn't get above 38 degrees for 2 weeks. Blizzarding every other day. You gotta just love to be miserable, I guess.
Woods grew up in Bristol Bay, and he's been fishing for Togiak herring his whole life. He's watched the fishery change dramatically.
At one time, I think there was a peak of close to 600 gillnetters plus 300-400 seiners, so close to 1,000 boats on a regular average basis. I don't know, you know, the market just started going down. They Americanized the fleet. Herring became less of a commodity in Japan, and we haven't diversified or found a different market for them other than bait and food fish.
At the peak of sacro herring fisheries in Alaska in the late 1980s, herring could bring in more than $1,000 per ton. In the last 8 years, Togiak herring have brought in between $50 and $170 a ton. Based on early market indicators, prices are expected to fall in the $50 to $100 range this year. That lower price can make it harder for gillnet boats to participate. Woods said that the price is high enough to keep him going, but barely.
The margins are way off, and the profitability is hard to recover. And I know what the expense is to operate over there, not only market-wise, but production-wise and tender-wise and crew-wise, and all that stuff is really, really costly when the price of herring is almost break even or at loss, you know, margins. So
still, Wood hopes that more gillnetters will choose to participate in the fishery. His processor hopes so too. Warner Liu is the fleet manager for Icicle Seafoods.
It was a fisherman's fairy tale. One boat with the entire gillnet quota to himself, an entire processing ship to himself, a personal tender fleet. That's as good as it gets. We'll see how the market is. I can't help anything on that side. But as far as the one fisherman went in our gillnet fleet, who I want to support year after year, we had a couple more guys that had events come up that couldn't attend, but we'll maintain this gillnet fleet because I want to see that portion of the quota remain with the gillnetters.
What will it take to get more gillnetters fishing? Woods and Liu stressed that there are not easy answers, but they both talked about the importance of diversifying the market for herring. Liu has even started a side business of selling smoked herring. In the meantime, Woods says that even with the low prices and tough weather, he plans to be back out in the turquoise water around Togiak next year, hauling in herring. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
And more herring news. This past winter, the Bering Sea had the lowest sea ice extension on record. That lack of sea ice has many ramifications, but for Norton Sound fishermen, there appears to be at least one upside for this year. The Norton Sound herring bait fishery has seen the second best harvest number since 2008. That's according to Justin Leon, Norton Sound Assistant Area Manager for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Over 80 tons of fish had been taken as of Tuesday of this week. He says sea ice cover plays a big role in catch success.
We've been limited just by what the sea ice allows us to get. It's kind of limited the fishery. We've got a really good biomass, a healthy stock out there. And as far as this year, I think it's been better for that just because we haven't had a lot of sea ice to deal with.
Leon says the Norton Sound herring fishery could see the highest total harvest on record since 1997. That would happen if fishermen reached the quota of 100 tons set by Norton Sound Seafood Products. The fishery opened this year on May 14th, so if catch continues at the current rate, the quota could be reached in a few days. But Leon says that will depend on how things play out.
It can be when you're on them, you grab a lot kind of a thing. So it definitely has potential for them to get their quota. As far as when that happens, it's not super predictable. We're gillnet fishing, so it's more if they happen to swim by and be in the area, whereas in other areas, if you're using a purse seine, you get on a whole big group and you scoop them all up. We'll just have to wait and see.
ADF&G also recently released its 2018 Norton Sound Salmon Management Plan. Salmon runs are expected to be similar to last year. Fishing for salmon will likely open in early June in the Eastern Norton Sound sub-districts and in late June for other areas.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KNOM's Gabe Colombo, KBBI's Aaron Bolton, and KDLG's Avery Lill. Be safe fishing and be sure to wear your life jackets. We and your family want you to come home safely. As always, a big thanks to everyone who supports this show, especially you, our listeners, because without you, there would be no point in doing the program. From KMXT in Kodiak, I am Maggie Walsh.